Please be seated.
Meals have always been an activity that we humans have ritualized in one way or another. Whether the opportunity is taken advantage of or not, in all cultures, meals offer a time for people to eat together. And meals potentially offer a time of great intimacy, a time in which all at the table can let down their guard and approach one another in a spirit of honesty, at least potentially. Meals are times where interactions between people who share the common table are both more frequent and more intense. Family members and friends gather not only to consume food, but to partake of one another's lives and catch up on the day's events. The time around the table gives sustenance, therefore, not only to the body, but to the mind and the soul, feeding all of a person's life. When guests are involved, meals are a time for hospitality to be extended, as well as for hospitality to be received and enjoyed. In the Middle East, for centuries, going back to the time of Abraham and even before, meals were considered sacred times because food was often scarce and hard to come by. In the desert or wilderness, hospitality was always extended to strangers, even to enemies at times, because a person's tent or a family's tent and the food and drink that the host could provide oftentimes meant survival itself for the traveler. In such conditions, the host was actually providing life in an environment in which life was hard to find and hard to maintain. If someone who had pitched a tent did not offer hospitality to a passerby, they were essentially guilty of killing them and of calling down a curse upon themselves. In addition to this, when visitors were in a host's tent, the host was responsible for the visitor's very life and would be expected to protect and defend them against any and all threats from the outside. All over the world, meals are a time when animosities between people who gather at the same table either cease or are laid aside for a time so that the food provided can be enjoyed in peace. Ironically, in many cultures and subcultures today, the custom is nearly the opposite of that which was practiced in the ancient Middle East. Today, dinner tables are often closed, and people who are not a part of the family or part of the clan or trusted group are not welcome to share in a meal. In these cultures, strangers are presumed to pose a danger to the group. Their presence prevents intimacy, because secrets cannot be shared openly at the table, and private details of life cannot be entrusted to them. In Amish culture, for example, and among some strict sects of the Plymouth Brethren and a few other Christian denominations, guests of any kind, hired help and the like, are forced to eat at separate tables, sometimes in separate rooms or even separate buildings. And meals, instead of being a time of interaction and joy, are shared in near silence. Either way you slice it, we've largely lost the sacred feel of a shared meal and the intense value of coming together, not only to eat, but to partake of one another's life experience. In America especially, meals have been reduced simply to getting nourishment into our bodies. And we try to do it as quickly as possible so that time is not wasted. We've forgotten that spending time on a meal is one of the points of nourishment. In the last 40 years, as we all know, drive-through windows have become the norm at fast food restaurants. And then instead of parking, we usually don't even stop driving our vehicles in order to eat. This is not only unsafe, but unhealthy. We often end up eating our food alone instead of sharing any part of our meal with anybody else. And that only reinforces our sense of loneliness and isolation. Have you ever told your kids or grandkids that you remember when restaurants did not have drive-through windows? You had to park and get out of your car to get food, even at McDonald's and Burger King and Taco Bell, just like at other normal sit-down restaurants. And then you either took your meal home or to a park, or you ate it at a table in a restaurant. Of course, there were drive-in restaurants where a waiter or waitress came up to the window of your car, and then you were served your food at the window of your car, but then you were parked, and the only danger is to your upholstery. Sometimes we would even take our burgers and drive to a park on the side of the road or in an empty lot by the airport to sit and watch planes take off and land. I know we did that when I was a kid. My point in saying all this is to call attention to the fact that meals are supposed to be meaning-filled moments in our human lives. Today's gospel lesson would not even exist if meals meant nothing more than consuming food in Jesus' day. It's precisely because Jesus recognizes that there is meaning floating around at the dinner table that he can call attention in the first place to two ways in which meaning is communicated and ways in which meaning can be changed. Jesus is invited to a dinner at the house of a Pharisee. The dinner takes place on the Sabbath, which means that all the food would have been prepared in advance so that no significant work had to be done in order to serve it. The text says that people, especially other Pharisees, we can assume, were watching Jesus closely. Of course, they want to see if Jesus is going to slip up or to try to put a new slant on some custom or maybe to cause some kind of an uproar because Jesus is watching people closely as well. He turns this dinner into a teaching moment. One lesson he offers is for the guests, and one lesson he offers is for the host, and for other potential hosts that may be in the crowd. The first thing Jesus points out after observing the guests come in and mill around and chat and start to move toward where they might sit or recline is that people tend to move toward those positions around the table that indicate importance. Usually these positions are close to the host's place at the end of the table, or the head of the table, and one place would have been reserved for the guest of honor. Remember, there are no chairs, and the tables are low to the ground. We're not told who the guest of honor is at this dinner party. It could have been Jesus himself. But Jesus begins teaching. I wonder if Jesus just raised his voice a bit and all the other chatter slowly stopped so people could listen, or if maybe the host or one of the important guests asked Jesus if he had anything he would like to say before the meal began. We don't honestly know. But Jesus begins to teach, and his first words are addressed to the guests that he's been observing. When you are invited by someone to a wedding banquet, he says, do not sit down at the place of honor, in case someone more distinguished than you has been invited by your host. Now, this might sound like common sense to us, who were born and raised in middle class in the Middle West or East Coast or wherever, but unless there are name tags that tell people where to sit, imagine the chaos that there might be at a more significant gathering. As people come simultaneously to a table among diplomats or heads of state, royalty from several countries at the same time. In ancient Jewish culture, it was not practicality or simple comfort that dictated who sits where. Ancient Middle Eastern cultures were cultures of honor and shame. How a person fit into a web of relationships in their family and community was not at all considered separately from the identity of the individual. It was part of who they were. If you shamed your family by presuming to be an honored guest when you were not, you would not be able to live down that story of that mistake for many years, if ever. Jesus is not the first person to say what he had to say to the Pharisees at this Sabbath, though. He was simply quoting Proverbs 25, which was well known to many. Do not put yourself forward in the king's presence or stand in the place of the great, for it is better to be told, come up here, than to be put lower in the presence of a noble. Of course, the lesson Jesus wants to drive home is that honor is not to be sought as an end to itself. For all who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted, he says. We find from the life of Christ himself, who lived and died very humbly, that true honor is assigned to those deserving it by God, not by other humans. The second lesson Jesus speaks is aimed at the host. And since there are many presents that day from a religious society and high society, he's getting his message across to other potential hosts of occasions as well. Convenient. Here Jesus is making this meal an example of how the kingdom of God will not be arranged. Presumably, Jesus wants the Pharisees present to take it to heart that the kingdom of God that they supposedly represent must be put into practice in radical ways right then and there if religion is going to mean something to the people. He tells them, when you invite people to a dinner, don't just invite friends and family and cronies that will all take turns inviting you back, and in so doing keep your little circle of friends unbroken. Instead, invite strangers, and especially people who would not normally have an opportunity to eat a meal like this, like those that you eat. Invite the poor, the sick, the homeless, the widows, and the orphans. When Mother Teresa received her Nobel Peace Prize, people of Calcutta threw her a congratulatory party. A large auditorium was set up with an elaborate buffet and a large cake. People who gathered for the celebration were benefactors from all over the country, dignitaries and church leadership. But when Mother Teresa was invited to be the first to go down the buffet line to load her plate, she said, "Follow me, everybody." She loaded her plate, and then she left the hall, walking two or three blocks to the nearest concentration of poor and ritually clean, unclean, people that she could find. Her guests, not wanting to be embarrassed, followed suit. And a large, dirty, smelly neighborhood was fed like those people had never been fed before. Hundreds of them. This is what Jesus is saying. We should not divide people into groups in our mind. Desirable, undesirable, nice, nasty, friend, enemy. What we do when we treat all people equally is we elevate those who have not known honor in their lives to a place of greater dignity. And we give them a foretaste of the good life that God intends for them, that they someday will share with him. So I think we have three lessons to learn today from the gospel lesson. The first is that we need to remember that consuming food is not the main reason for meals. I know I've talked a bit about that before. Meals should be meaningful, even if that only boils down to making sure that we thank God for the good things that he's made available to us, and for the people that he's allowing us to share those good things with. If our meals have ceased to be meaningful times of fellowship, then we need to work hard to reverse that trend and to be intentional about when and with whom we eat, instead of just grabbing a bite alone every time we feel a hunger pain. It's not about our hunger. The second lesson I think we can learn is the first that Jesus was trying to teach today. We should never assume that we are important in anybody's eyes but God's. Humility is a great way to avoid anxiety and to allow for potential positive developments in all of life. Jesus is exalted not because he is God's son, but because he did not lay claim to who he really was or to what he really deserved when he had a chance to do so. Instead, he humbled himself. Our third lesson has to do with hospitality in general. All that we have is God's, not ours. Sharing with people equally the bounty with which we have been blessed can only bring us joy. It It's a wonderful thing to watch somebody else be surprised by the bestowal of honor. There's a great dinner party awaiting all of us. I hope you have all opened your invitations. If you haven't, I can tell you that they say something like this. Jesus requests the honor of your presence at a heavenly banquet that has already begun. Come as you are. The bread and the wine are to die.